Oh.
Max von Sydow. That's how you pronounce that name. I had to Google it.
Max just, von just for Sydow. Any,
just if either of you didn't know.
I would have got that wrong.
I did the YouTube thing earlier.
Yeah, same. I listened to the same thing.
Was that a Swedish guy like who had a really long intro before?
Today
finally...
we are going to learn how to pronounce the name of the Swedish actor, Max von Sydow. All right, I've learned now. Why is there still over half the video left? Yeah.
This is good content. Leave this in.
Is that sarcasm or is that a compliment?
No, this is... These are words. Yeah. This is
probably something.
This is already more than I thought we had.
Loving that high energy, boys.
Hello and welcome. This is So You Think That Was Good, Do You? A podcast where we take a look back at the films from your childhood and question the absurdity of their universes. My name is Evan, and I'm joined by the lovely Sam and Carl. Boys, I've missed you. How are you doing?
We've missed you too, as evidenced by last episode and how that went. Yeah,
do not ever leave us again, please.
Never again.
Well, actually... I think next time it's... So you can leave us one more time because it's Sam's turn to do the next intro. Do not ever leave us again two more times.
When you say my turn to do the intro, you mean like in the next sort of 5 years when Evan takes
another day off.
Yeah. Well, you say that, but we've had a little bit of a gap since the... Well, certainly since the last time we recorded together. I think you said it was 3 weeks, Carl. And that's hit me, that break. I've been quite nervous about doing this, not only because of that gap, but also because of this movie. And unless you're going to tell us how you are, Carl, which I don't think you are, I'm going to get right into it. Because this week, we watched Stephen King's Needful Things from 1993, starring the absolutely fantastic, even though we just talked about this, I'm going to butcher it, Max von Sydow?
Sydow.
Sydow, damn.
Sydow.
Max von Sydow. And before we start talking about the movie, I'll do the plot synop. But please bear in mind that I do take these from the top of Google as they come. So brace yourselves.
It's always the first time you've ever read them as well.
Yes. A mysterious new shop opens in a small town, which always seems to stock the deepest desires of each shopper with a price far heavier than expected. A mysterious new shop opens in a small town which always seems to stock the deepest desires of each shopper with a price far heavier than expected. And then that's it. They didn't bother covering any more of the rest of the movie. Same bit twice.
They got to the end of that and went, oh, surely more happens. No? Okay, just say it again.
We've got a word minimum here. Double that up. That's on IMDb. That's the one from IMDb. So
that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a few other things do transpire, but...
I imagine everybody who's listening to this, other than Chloe, because I know she's seen this movie, they have not seen this. So I'll briefly go over what happened. A dude rolls into town. He's the devil. Like, straight away, he comes in this black classic American car. He's dressed to the nines, and he looks like the devil. He looks exactly like the... Well, because that Rick and Morty episode is based on this, but imagine that guy, but older. That's him. He rolls in. He sets up shop immediately. Like, same day he arrives, he's got a shop in town. It's like a charity shop. Everything on display is shit. But if you come into the shop, he'll go downstairs and get you something good. And then instead of you paying any money, he'll ask you to do a little trick on somebody. And slowly... Everybody in the town does a trick on everybody else, and then there's a good 50 minutes of just characters talking to each other and walking around and entering the shop, and then at the end, everything kicks off and there's some explosions.
Is this still the plot synop?
Yes, yes. Now let me say that all again because there's a word minimum. A guy rolls into town.
I know you said that he's the devil. Well, I do have a question for you. Is he the devil?
No, he's...
He's not very devil-y, is he?
He is the dude from The Stand, whose name I've forgotten right now.
Dude from The Stand? I mean, you're not saying Randall Flagg, are you?
I am, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because he doesn't feel like the devil. I know that everyone keeps going, oh, he's definitely the devil, but he just seems like a bit of a twat.
I mean, he does survive an explosion.
He seems like another... Oh, he's definitely something, but he seems more like a mischievous god, like a Loki or a ancient god sort of thing who just come down to mess with humans. He doesn't feel like any Christian idea of the devil you're ever told. We're just told he's the
devil. That's an interesting thing. So part of the context for him being the devil that we get is when the main character, and I'm not going to say the name of anyone in this film, by the way, because I don't remember a single name. But the main character finds a load of newspaper clippings that...
Alan
finds a load of newspaper clippings that Leland, the devil, has kept, which are basically all of his foul machinations from the past. Ooh. And it goes through various things, like... So he seems to have orchestrated JFK's assassination, the nuclear bombing of Hiroshima, and at least in some way influenced Adolf Hitler's actions, to put it broadly. And now he did all that, and now he's in a small town in America, sort of getting under people's skin. He's really toned it down, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, how many people's bedding had to get turkey shit on them and have people have their tires cut before you escalate things to kill the president?
Well, apparently it's the other way around. He's slowing down.
This depends how quickly he gets from town to town. Is it like Santa, where this is his Christmas day and he can be all over the place in a short amount of time? Or is he actually spending the months it feels like this movie takes place over?
I mean, it'd take him a long time to do Dallas if he wanted to get the president, wouldn't it?
No, he just has to walk into Dallas one day, convince one guy to go into a building and take a shot. That is a day's work.
That's a really easy one, actually, yeah. I think probably Hiroshima was a bigger job. He didn't have the head of the US military come into his Needful Things shop and try and sell him a little thimble and say, you do have to press the button, though.
I reckon it was even easier than that. He walks in, he goes, oh, I've heard you like nuclear bombs. I'll give it to you for free, but...
buy one, get one free. What shall I do with the other one?
Yeah, this is his jam. So he has like a very special item to someone, and he wants you to do something that seems like a minor task. And whilst you're talking about those newspapers too, later on, when after he's convinced Billy to do something, Billy's the boy who comes in soon, I'm sure we'll discuss him. He takes out a book and he writes Castle Rock at the top, where this film is based, and lots of other Stephen King properties are also based in Castle Rock, like The Dark Half. Can't remember if the Stand By Me is based in Castle Rock as well. Yeah, he takes out a book, but just before you see him turn the page and write Billy's name, you see he was last in Pretoria in South Africa, and Nelson Mandela's name is on his list. The implications of that, I don't know what, but an interesting include in this movie.
I don't know what they're trying to say there.
Me either. Nor do I want to dig into it.
No.
To be fair, we didn't mention it, but in The Running Man, when Arnie was trying to escape to Honolulu, it was announcing flights to like Mandelaville in South Africa. So maybe Stephen King just has a real thing against Nelson Mandela.
Mm.
Or whoever is directing these films. Because I feel like Stephen King probably wasn't very involved in the last two that we've done.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. Or Nelson Mandela is Randall Flagg.
It's catching on. Mr. King wasn't that involved in this one. He didn't write or direct.
Stephen's better.
As far as I'm aware, this is just an adaptation of his book, which came out like 2 years before this movie did. And there's no need to wait to the end. The biggest complaints people have who liked the book, who watched this, are it's not long enough. In the book, you hear lots more from the characters, more talking, there's more walking around, there's more of their stories. And then there's people who've only seen the film whose complaint is there's way too much talking, way too much walking around, and way too much seeing the characters in this movie.
Yeah, it's very repetitive.
Yes.
He just does the same thing to many people, it feels.
Speaking of the books, so I watched this with Charlie, my girlfriend, who has read the book.
Oh.
And her take on it was interesting because she was a bit sort of unsure what to make of aspects of it, because she was kind of thinking, well, this doesn't feel true to the book. In the book, apparently, I mean, I haven't read it. This is just what I'm getting from her. She said, in the book, all of the characters were really attached to the things that they got from the shop. I mean, they were obsessed. In the film, I kind of felt like they didn't give a fuck. That one guy quite liked his jacket, but
yeah,
That's as far as it went. None of the other characters really gave a shit about the stuff that they got.
There's one guy right at the end who's like, no, that's my needful thing. But apart from that, yeah, it never really shows that way that they're just obsessively attached to this thing that they will do anything for it. But I assume that this is this post the bin full of tissues?
So this is, I think, the first book he wrote after he got out of rehab. There's one that came out before this, but he'd already pretty much finished that before coming out of rehab. This is the first one he wrote and published.
Because I assume this was meant to be the whole bin. What people will do for the things they're addicted to, but it never really felt like anyone was massively attached to that thing.
And well, no,
also,
exactly.
It also didn't feel like the sort of things that people would do. Maybe
no,
people
absolutely
who are
not.
The massive coke addicts.
Taken as a whole, the concept, and what I have to assume the book is, which is a lot of this escalation and people being totally obsessed with these things that they have and the way that that escalates into hating each other. I assume that it was meant to be a very satirical look at consumerism in America. It makes sense that he wrote it, you know, while he was a bit more clear-headed. And so it's not the psychopathic shit that he was writing before. But it doesn't come across in the film, I don't think. It's just a wacky series of, oh, hey, I've skinned a dog.
I was surprised that the manner in which he goes about messing with the town. I assumed that it was going to be a monkey's paw situation, that you get your gift and then that the bad thing comes of what you from what you thought you wanted. But it's just him making people do bad things in order to earn their gift.
You say making people do things.
Well, yeah.
It's not, though, is it? He gives the gift to them. I'm sorry if I've interrupted you here. He gives the gift to them. They have it. He, like, never takes anything back from anyone. They just immediately do the thing he said. And if they... Sometimes, you know, he asks someone to do another thing as part of the same deal. Or sometimes they just come back and they take it as advice. But as soon as he says it, they go and do it. And I don't know if that's just implying that, you know, the humans are weak or if he has some magic power that's influencing them. But I don't really get that impression from it, because whenever magic is alluded to in this, like when anybody touches their item, there's that electricity that goes all over their body and it's not very, you know, inferred at all. It's very much on the surface for you to see. Yeah. So that's what I didn't like about this as well. Not to fucking dog on this so early, but people just do it straight away. There's no like him crawling his way into these people's lives. He rolls into town, he asks some people to fuck some other people up and they go do it immediately.
This is how all the King Full Springs episode goes.
The thing I found so funny about that is our protagonist is a policeman in this, and not a single character in this, when told to kill dogs, smear shit over things, damage property, not a single person calls the police.
No. And that's police singular, because there are at most two in this town. It's a very small place. Let's go over some of the characters so people are caught up. You're right, the main guy is Sheriff Alan something. We'll just call him Alan. There's Polly, who's the waitress, who he's getting engaged to. And the movie opens with them doing a little bit of a flirt. Yeah, Cole's nodding his head. He likes a piece of that. They're doing a bit of a flirty thing. And this is where I got my hopes up on my rewatch of this, because as they're doing that, and it seems like a normal opening, then the crazy-eyed, gormy-faced Nettie leans into shot, interrupts their conversation and is like, there's a new store opening over the road. It's called Needful Things. It has everything we want. You don't know where she comes from. The plot has now started. The movie has been on 30 seconds. But I like how Stephen King that is to get a crazy character in there so early. But talking about the film's length, because one of you mentioned this earlier, there is actually a four-hour cut of this, because the studio who asked for this to be made.
Is that where all the walking and talking went?
Mate, it's all more walking and talking. It was a 4-hour, two-part miniseries that went on TV, and they never re-released it again, apart from on the German release of the film in the bonus features.
It's 2 extra hours of Polly cheating on her husband with Max Sydow.
Yeah, oh, that was uncomfortable stuff.
Release the Sydow cut? Doesn't really work.
It's staying in. And then we get introduced to some other characters as well. So there's Brian, who we'd mentioned previously. He is a a small boy, and he's Leland Gaunt's first customer. He walks in, Leland shows him about, like, picks up, it's all crap in there. Anything up on the upper level is shit you've got in your own house. And he even says that to Brian. He says, you're not going to want to have this. No, of course not. Those are just objects, just useless things. And he has been open for 10 minutes. This is his first customer. His brand is Needful Things. And the first thing he tells him is, this is all useless stuff. But I could go downstairs and I might have something for you.
He also, I mean, we keep saying that he opens a shop. It's just his house with a sign on the front.
Oh, yeah. At what point is a shop just a house? This is living room,
this is beyond
hallway,
whatever that point is.
Up to his bedroom. A new shop has not opened across the street. Someone's having a yard sale that never ends.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so this is his sales tactic. I mean, not necessarily calling all of his own stock total shit, but he does do that quite a lot. But his sales tactic is filling his house with a load of confusing bullshit that no one really needs or understands, and then relentlessly hovering over customers and trying to direct them towards things. Which is why I'm pretty convinced that he has now gone on to be the CEO of Lush. Because it's the same business tactic.
This is all useless stuff, apart from this thing.
Yeah, apart from this magic electric horse game.
Or this baseball card definitely signed by the star and for you. Not that I've been in the back going, to Brian, my good friend.
Yeah. He gets a Mickey Mantle baseball card, and then Brian is like, wait, that's impossible. That's my name. A direct quote from the boy who thinks he's the only Brian. And then Gaunt asks him how much he'll pay for the card, whilst doing like little sleight of hand magic with it, depreciating the value of that card in real time, because it's not in a sleeve or a pocket. So by the time it gets to Brian, it's worth the 95 cents that he gives it. And then he's like, oh no, that's half the price, but now you've got to do a little trick. And Brian's first trick is to go over to the farm of some crazy lady they've just spotted out the window and throw shit on everything.
Yeah. So this is posed. This is the first of the tasks that he's setting people to start sowing a bit of discontent in the town. And this one, it's our kind of introduction into it, because the woman that he's throwing the turkey shit out the laundry of is a bit of a bitch.
Oh yeah, she's a
psycho. No one likes her. She's really mean. She like threatens dogs, all kinds of stuff. So we kind of watch this and go, yeah, okay. That's feasible. I can see that you could be easily convinced into playing a little prank on her. But again, I've got to come back to it. At what point does someone give you a jacket and say, you can have it if you skin a dog?
And if they give you your fancy new jacket, don't take it to the dog skinning. You are going to get your fancy new jacket fucking ruined. But it is a case of, I guess it's sort of a how quickly society can fall apart if people aren't civil. To some extent, but it's also how quickly society can fall apart when a man who knows everything about you, everything you've ever done, and everything you ever will do shows up.
Yeah. And that's where it felt kind of biblical for me. Well, I think he's the devil, because at the end, just as Alan is giving his big speech to everyone, like he points out right that all this man has come to do is come and prey on your pride and your gluttony and your jealousy and turn you all against each other. But it's just such a big jump. Between the start of the movie is he's giving everyone everything, then the next part of the movie is people doing little tricks on each other, and then it's a real jump up. Hugh is his name. So this guy comes in with a sports jacket, and his task is basically to amplify what's going on between that crazy turkey lady and Nettie, the psychoid woman from the beginning, by going and killing her dog. And Gaunt is like the most transparent a shopkeeper has ever been, explains to this dude that he is thousands of years old, has been doing these hijinks since time immemorial. He knew Jesus and follows that up with nasty way to go. And then, oh, no, this isn't when he skins the dog. This is when he gives him the shotgun to go kill another dude for doing absolutely nothing to him. So there's a massive jump in the movie from walking and talking to straight away everybody's being murdered. I think that's where the disconnect is for me.
During this ending, he also is like, and I'm going to see your son in some other country in 50 years' time.
Yeah. Well,
how didn't you know all this was going to go tits then, if you can see that far into the future?
That was my question too.
That's a good point. Yeah, I think So the way that everything devolves into kind of chaos is very abrupt in the film. And I think the best example of it is this guy, and I don't remember his name, but he is...
I'll try for you, buddy.
The guy who sells boats for a living, but we never see him sell a single boat.
Yeah, Baxter Danforth.
Baxter, who everybody calls...
Buster.
Buster.
Buster Danforth, yeah.
Well, I don't know if Buster's his actual name, because every time anyone calls him Buster, it triggers him
his
like...
His last name's Keaton.
Nothing you've ever seen.
And oh, it's Danforth Keaton.
A famous actor.
Right, there we go.
So him being called Buster Keaton...
It's fine.
...as a joke. For him, it seems like... Well, I wrote, is Buster the Middle America N-word? Because he acts like someone's just said the worst thing imaginable to him. It's like, what's wrong with Buster Keaton? But what I was saying is the way that his character changes over the film is jarring as fuck. Like, he's a bit of an asshole at the start, and then he buys a little gambling toy, goes home, and has a fucking psychopathic break as he screams at his wife and then tries to kill everyone.
See, I wrote the opposite thing down. I felt like he was the only character who didn't need Leland to show up. He was already paranoid and dotting about the place, talking about the people watching him. And then there is quite a jump up when he murders his wife for no reason. But she was nagging.
She was a yapper.
And nobody is doing anything to hide their crimes either. They're not worried about the two police in town. Like, so Brian, his fingerprints are all over those apples that he threw into the house. They have fingerprint technology. This isn't like set in the 30s or something. This is set in the 90s. Hugh, just before skinning the dog, flicks a cigarette butt he was just smoking into Nettie's yard. And Nettie doesn't even bother to see if Buster is home before breaking in and leaving all those notes everywhere. It's crazy how little attention is paid to like the characters' actions in this movie. They're just written to do stuff. They do it and we're expected to accept it and move on.
Yeah, Nettie. So this character, Nettie, I would say she is this film's requisite sort of autistic creep that is in every single one of these films. There's always someone who's a bit... Carl's waving.
Good hear. She's the Hurtytum from Pet Sematary. There's always one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. There's always one in these films who's just a little bit kind of meant to be creepy but isn't the villain.
Hmm. Yeah.
But aside from that, she seems like a nice enough, if slightly delicate person until she gleefully... dances around this guy's house that she doesn't know, putting the most horrific things in these kind of notices.
She got a fugly ornament for it, mate. It wasn't for nothing.
But she got a small toy, well, yeah, she was happy to do it.
This is what I didn't get. Like, you keep saying he's the devil, but the devil punishes bad people, and he just...
Does he?
That is definitely the whole thing with hell.
That is his thing.
Yeah.
That's God's thing. The devil's trapped in hell.
God hangs out with cool people.
Read the fucking Bible, boys.
The devil punishes bad people or
the
something.
Devil... Oh, wait, is that Dante's Inferno? In one of them, it says that he's in a big block of ice on the ninth level of hell. Circle.
I am not going to read the Bible. I didn't even read Needful Things.
But yeah, so the people he picks, you do find yourself going, from an audience perspective, I'm not too desperate to watch the town drunk, the town autist, and a little boy who talks longingly about his dad as if his dad isn't around anymore get punished by some old man. And the only person I'm okay with seeing him mess with is Buster, and he just sort of falls apart all by himself for the most part. He never seems to... I don't remember seeing him play a trick on anyone. He just gets given his magic horse toy that tells him which horses will win the races, and then they win the races, and then he has a big wad of cash. What I will say about him, though, is he sat and ran every single race of the day. First time. That was hours. I'd have done maybe two and then gone and checked.
You'd do one and check, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Well, that could be lucky, though. Run two. If you win two in a row, you go, oh shit, this toy works.
Yeah, he was there for a very long time. He was really getting into it as well. I kind of feel like he was enjoying the toy more than the money.
Yeah, I don't even remember seeing him win any money. Did we get any resolution on that?
Yeah, you see, he's in the bar with a massive wad of cash.
Oh, right. Okay. He was an entertaining character. I don't think I enjoyed watching him whilst the movie was on. I think I was so worried about you boys watching it because it didn't feel like the right pick that I could not enjoy Buster this time around.
Oh, I loved him in the final scene.
Yeah.
I thought he was excellent there.
It is funny when he pops up after the sheriff has given his big speech about he's turned us all against each other. He's making like 7 deadly sins because apparently he's the devil. And he just rocks up with a sniper rifle. He's going, oh, shut the fuck up.
Hits him in the arm. Close range with a gun with a scope. But he's firing from the hip.
No scope, bitch. Speaking of missing targets, Stephen King, we said before with Pet Sematary, he said that was really dark and he didn't want to go that dark again. Kid tries to shoot himself in the head.
Yeah, he does in the book, I think. And they were going to in the movie, but didn't because thought it was too dark. Yeah. And a dog is skinned and crumpled up into a ball and hung from the ceiling.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the actual things that happened, like, it was quite funny to watch, but taking it at face value, it was pretty dark.
Yeah, and people's deeds or punishments really don't seem to align with anything. It really just, why go that far to the old, it's pink slips on a door, turkey shit on some bedding, apples through a window, and then kill and skin her dog.
Yeah, it's a jumper.
It's hardly an eye for an eye.
Yeah.
It's a dog for a coat.
I suppose though she was a nutter too, so maybe he thought it would, she would do it.
All it shows is that she's a domestic abuse victim.
Oh no, the woman who was Nettie thought skinned the dog is a nutter. She is an abuse victim, yes. But I bet people call her Nutty Nettie.
Please cut this, but in this town we apparently have Buster and Nutty.
I'm not cutting that. And I also want to jump back to something you said that. I don't think he's come to punish anyone. I don't think it's like the devil in that sense.
I don't think he has. I'm saying that he's not the devil.
Oh, I think he is.
Sense.
I think him calling them tricks and pranks is what muddies that water. But I see it from a perspective of he's come to town to turn what were good people into bad people. And that's all he does anywhere he goes. I think the newspapers adds like an extra layer of confusion because there's a massive difference between people infighting in a town and bombs being dropped on Japan. That's a very big trick.
Very big trick. He's also, he's got long, horrible, gross fingernails and he moves in from out of town and starts pawning off all of the stuff that he has. He could just be a well-spoken crackhead.
Isn't that what everyone is in this? I just assume this is a very ham-fisted metaphor for drugs in a small town as you watch people get torn apart by their needful things.
Yeah.
Yeah, with your little boy who gets his excitement from touching the card or the thrill of drugs, and then you got Polly who needs her needful thing to take away the pain.
But they never go back for a second needful thing.
But they keep it's having like, to do my deeds. That's thing. What he says. He's like, they think that it's over because they've done their deed. And he's like, well, I haven't said this is over. Because I think I've never done drugs. But you always hear it's like the first one is the good one. And then you just have to keep going back. So I assume it's just you just have to keep doing the bad things afterwards.
I thought about it like that.
I mean, we say that they need to do them. He's not that convincing when he tries to tell them the things that they need. Like, he goes up and he gives them a bit of a, oh, you'd better do it. You'd better go smear that poo. And then he leaves and they're like, well, I'll keep not doing that then.
If you want this little baggie, you better skin a dog.
Probably not going to do that.
I don't ever really see him leave his store, so I'm probably all right.
Yeah, did it. Yeah. Totally did it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, he doesn't go with anyone.
Hey, I did give you a nice cheese knife. You'd better go bomb that church.
You really did want that cheese knife, though, didn't you?
That's a weird little thing we haven't touched on, is the vicar and the priest, Catholic and... Oh, there's so many different...
Fuck their names. Yeah, there's a Catholic one and there's a Baptist one. They don't like each other in the first place, and this dude is loving winding them up.
Is that supposed to... Is that saying something about religion? That just, these two are arguing over the tiniest, pettiest things, the devil's just doing his work amongst everyone?
Yeah, I read somewhere end, where they're literally about to kill each other. I think the Catholic guy has something that looks like you use to sheath corn over the Baptist guy. And it's supposed to be like this mini apocalypse that's happened because even religions of like are willing to commit whatever the bad sins are called.
Sins.
Yeah, everything's a sin in their fucking eyes. There's got to be a bigger umbrella word. The bad sins. and Leland's fucking loving that shit. But yeah, then, what's his name? Alan comes in. He does this big sort of AA-style speech where, like, you know, trusting in each other and trusting in God is all we need. It's this guy is actually the one who's coming to town and he's done this to everyone. And that annoyed me so much because, no, he didn't make anyone do anything. Everybody at every point in this movie chose to do it. And also, take it back. There's definitely a refund policy. Just have done just throwing chicken shit at some clothes. And if he asks you to do something else, I don't want the baseball card anymore. Thank you. There's no need to shoot yourself in the fucking head.
I'm not taking it back. Where will I find another Brian to sell this to? There are so few.
Is that another quote from the world's only Brian? Yeah, and then, well, actually, the actual climax of the movie is pretty awesome. Buster shoots Alan. He comes out covered in dynamite. Leland calls him Buster just one too many times, and he grabs him, pushes him into the house. It explodes. You think it's over, and then you see Leland walk out. He's fine. He comes down to Alan and Polly, gives them a speech about he'll be seeing their grandson in however many years, and drives off.
Yeah, the ending especially. But I feel like the whole film, and I don't know if you two got this as well, gave me sort of Hot Fuzz vibes in that it's a small town, rural. The police force are absolutely useless at stopping the chaos.
Devil,
just escalate until you get these conspiratorial killings.
Yeah.
And all of it culminated in that one of the final scenes where Alan is firing his gun into the air and screaming.
Yeah.
It was just perfect.
And Skinner would make a perfect Leland Gaunt.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing. I actually couldn't figure out at times if this was supposed to be a comedy. It does feel a bit too silly until a dog gets skinned, and then it suddenly takes a real dramatic turn. But at times it almost seems a little amusing, a bit silly.
I mean, the ending's so wacky.
Yeah, oh yeah. When Nettie is fawning over that, I don't know what they're called, but you'd recognise them if you saw them. They're little porcelain figurines that are collectibles. And this is like his least sales pitchy one of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, he could not believe his luck. When he walks downstairs and she's looking at that and he's like, really? That? I don't even have to go to the basement. Yeah. That's the tap.
Oh, you think he had something else for us? He could put anything on the podium.
He had Mickey Mantle stuck in the basement waiting to force him to sign something else. Look, it says to my best friend Nettie. Just an entire town walking around with baseball cards from Mickey Mantle. Oh, never mind. It turns out this town just wants shit.
Zero value because they've been written on and everybody has one.
Where the fuck am I going to sell this to? Another Nettie?
He had a Sharpie in his basement desperately scrawling the name of the US military general onto a nuke.
Don't address this one to Buster. He'll hate it.
Well, that wraps us up for the movie, boys. And because I knew we'd be a bit light on notes because of just all of that movie, I wanted to try and make up a little game, but I was struggling to think of anything that wasn't like the usual trivia and bad review stuff, and also like just asking you to do pranks. That didn't seem good. So I asked ChatGPT to run a few things by me, and it suggested trivia games, bad reviews, and pranks. But then it suggested riddles. And I thought, oh, like riddles about things in the shop could be quite good. Give me a few of those and I'll see if they're any fun. If not, we just won't do this. And then it gave them to me. And they're so fucking bad, we have to do them. I'm going to warn you, the riddles themselves have nothing to do with Needful Things, neither do the answers. But ChatGPT insists there is a sort of more intellectual connection to the things in the movie based on these riddles. And I'll give those to you afterwards. There's no points. It's just two riddles each. Just give me one answer. Don't guess forever because it's so shit. Okay, Carl, I'll start with you. I'm not alive, but I grow. I don't have lungs, but I need air. I don't have a mouth, but water kills me. What am I?
Is it Ned Ryerson?
It's fire. And it's inspired by the fiery climax of Needful Things. So now you've got an idea of the kind of things we're working with. Sam, I speak without a mouth and hear without ears. I have no body, but I come alive with the wind. What am I?
Is it like a, I don't know, a storm cloud or thunder or something?
It's an echo, and that's reflecting the eerie atmosphere of Castle Rock. These are verbatim. Okay, call again. Your last one. I have keys but no locks. I have space but no room. You can enter but can't go inside. What am I?
I'm just going to go solely on the keys thing and ignore everything else and say a piano.
Ooh, a keyboard.
Fuck off, I
you
win, that's
enter,
a point.
But... Oh, I see, there's an...
Yeah, so this is how it's related. It's inspired by modern technology and the ways in which Gaunt Shop manipulates people. No idea how that's even a connection, but...
No, fair enough. Sounds good.
Yep, last one. Sam, if you get this, you win the podcast. I'm not alive, but I can grow. I don't have lungs, but I need air. What am I?
Why is Sam getting all the ones about
another
lungs and
fire.
Air?
it is fire
again. Another take on the element of fire and its destructive powers. This was Riddle 8 down, and it had gone so far down the text, it had forgotten it was talking about Needful Things, but had read that it'd written about fire.
To be fair, I do that sometimes.
AI really is going to take over, isn't it?
And that wraps us up for those.
I'm so glad that I've won the podcast there. What's the price for this needful thing that I have gained?
Oh, it was the riddles, I think. I'm still an apprentice, so I'm still learning about the different types of pranks, but we've just done riddles, which are technically a type of prank because they're not fun. But we'll move on to skinning dogs in a few weeks, I think.
Cool. I was expecting to have to assassinate a president, so that works for me.
Oh, well, I've got a bomb for you, obviously.
You have to go bomb Japan.
Okay, that wraps up the movie, boys, and takes us nicely into the question. I did pick this, so does somebody want to ask me?
So, Evan. Think that was good, do you?
Okay, before you two shit on this so fucking much, okay? I'm sorry I picked this. I actually really like it still. It's just not very good for the pod. There are obviously glaring things wrong with it, but I think Max von Last Name's performance is enough to carry us through. I'm sorry it was 2 hours, and I'm sorry I thought it was going to be so good I fucking recommended it. But yeah, I still had a good time, boys. I'm sorry about this, though. Cole?
No.
How are you?
No. Yeah, I'm doing good, mate. So I'm still figuring out that riddle. I wanted to like it so much. I really like the barest bones of it. But what they actually do just doesn't work for me. Like the whole drug metaphor that I'm getting from it. The little boy getting his high. The guy who peaked in high school. The woman who was a victim of domestic abuse. And the woman who's dealing with all her pain. All going to get their needful thing. But I think I would have preferred it if he'd have just died at the end. If he wasn't the devil and it was just a case of people are fucking shit. You know, like the Wonder Woman movie from recently where it turns out that no one was manipulating anything, people just do that. That sort of idea.
That would be good, but the movie would still need a lot of editing because there's quite a lot of scenes where he's clearly being evil. Even if he died at the end, he's still pretty sus throughout.
But he could have still just been a person, maybe.
Cut out the nail stuff and the electricity.
Less electric.
Sam?
Yeah, no, I liked it in concept. I think it's a cool idea, and in a way it's made me want to read the book, because apparently it is quite different, and I believe the ending's quite different to the film, so that'd be interesting to see. But putting that aside... Oh, man, I just found it a bit boring.
Yeah.
I wanted to see either way more or way less of people talking to each other.
This is my experience of all Stephen King stories, is I hear the plot synopsis sometimes twice and go, that sounds like a great idea, what an amazing sounding story, but then you read the actual story and go, oh, that's not what I had in mind.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's your story, but you're wrong.
That's basically your input on every episode we do, Carl. You always have a better idea.
Yeah.
Oh, cracking, boys. Well, sorry about this. But thank you so much for joining me, and thank you all for listening. I have lost all confidence. It's been 3 weeks, and I've forgotten what I usually say here.
Let Sam do this, but he nailed it last week.
Follow us over on Twitter and Instagram at So You Think Pod. Please leave us. We'll take 4 stars this episode, guys. Thanks. And, God, next week we will be watching The Dark Tower, which in theory I am not looking forward to because I turned it off 20 minutes into that movie. But
it's,
I think,
all you two
watching
ever talk
something
about.
I definitely will despise, based on a series I love, will be a good, good watch. So thank you for choosing that, Carl.
You're welcome.
And until then,
see
goodbye.
You next week.
Fuck off.
See you.
See you.
It's pronounced Sing Tao.